Our third case this morning is 2020-312, State of Ohio versus Theotis Montgomery. For the appellant, we have Ms. Briggs.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Addison Spriggs, and I'm here on behalf of Mr. Theotis Montgomery. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case that depended entirely on the credibility of the alleged victim. The prosecutor's proximity to the victim at counsel table vouched for her credibility. But the state went one step further than that when they introduced her as a representative of the state of Ohio. This blurred the distinction between the state and the alleged victim. Allowing an alleged victim to sit at counsel table for the duration of a trial and introducing her to the jury as a representative of the state of Ohio violates Mr. Montgomery's right to a fair trial.
Counsel, there's two things there. One, sitting at the counsel table for the trial, and the other's the naming as representative of the state. What do you think, if she had not been named a representative of the state and merely introduced as the victim, it was permissible to sit at the counsel table?
No, Your Honor, I don't. I think here, they were part and parcel with each other. She was first introduced as a representative of the state, and then her placement next to the prosecutor reinforced for the jury that she was a part of the prosecution's team. And so they're really indivisible in this case.
Counsel, I'm not asking about, counsel, I didn't ask you about this case. I said, had she been situated at the trial table, the prosecutor's table, without that designation? That's my question to you.
Yes, Your Honor. I think we would still be here if that were the case, simply because her credibility was at question and it was the central issue in this case. Her own family members didn't believe her, and by sitting her next to the prosecutor, it was equal to cloaking her with the state's imprimatur.
Did you raise that argument in the Court of Appeals?
Well, yes, Your Honor.
Your assignment of error was appellant was denied his right to fair trial as guaranteed by the 6th and 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution when the trial court allowed the alleged victim to remain in the courtroom as the state's designated representative. That doesn't say anything about the counsel table. I mean, it seems the focus as I read the brief is about being in the courtroom.
You're right, Your Honor, in that it wasn't raised in the assignment of error, but the text of the merit brief actually raises both issues, both her seated at counsel table and her being designated as a representative of the state of Ohio. And it was preserved at the trial court as well.
And that's because there's one sentence in there that says something about sitting at the table.
As I read this,
the focus seems to be on the courtroom in what you argue in the Court of Appeals.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think here both issues are combined. They reinforce each other. And so the fact that one was raised, yes, the one sentence, I believe there were two sentences where it was raised specifically, but the court didn't address that argument. The appellate court didn't address that argument. They simply said, under Marcy's law, she's allowed to be in the courtroom, but never address the actual issue of where in the courtroom she is allowed to be.
It's also, I think you've emphasized that she was the first witness. So in regard to Chief Justice O'Connor's question, even if she had not been named as a representative of the state, would your answer be different based on the fact that she was the first witness and then she would be then for the rest of the trial sitting by counsel table?
No, my answer would not be different. There are certain courtroom procedures and seating arrangements that can be inherently prejudicial and can misrepresent to the jury the members or the parties of the case. And that's exactly what we have here. She was misrepresented.
But what about her right to confer with the prosecution, to assist the prosecution in prosecuting the case? So she testifies first, so the jury knows exactly who she is. She returns then to counsel table. She's not given any other title other than representative, the title at all. But during the trial, the jury would be able to observe that that the prosecutor could ask her questions. Is that a problem?
It is a problem, Your Honor. The fact that she is sitting at counsel table, let me rewind. She has no unlimited right to confer with the state. Marcy's Law has internal constraints built in that don't allow her an unlimited right to confer with the state. There is a phrase, upon request, in front of that specific portion of Marcy's Law. So she has no real-time ability to confer with the state in the middle of trial. Likely, if that were to happen, defense counsel would object and ask that it take place outside the presence of the jury.
But I'm thinking about a trial situation, and if the prosecutor, you know, there are other witnesses who weren't all exactly favorable to her. So if the trial prosecutor had asked her to sit at the table, which is what happened here, so that he or she could ask questions throughout the testimony in the trial, for instance, on direct of maybe her grandfather, that she would be right there to actually aid the prosecution. Is there anything wrong with that?
There may be a situation where she might be necessary, but that's not the situation we have here. The state didn't advance that theory until this brief, the briefing of this case. They never once said that she was necessary to assist with the cross-examination of her family members. In fact, the police detective interviewed or spoke with all of her family members in the process of this trial and in the investigation of this trial. So there may be circumstances where her presence might be necessary, or an alleged victim's presence might be necessary, but that's simply not the case here.
And if, just one follow-up then, if we're comparing the specificity of both the objection at trial and the response of the prosecutor, neither were specific in the respect of the defense attorney didn't mention the Sixth or the 14th Amendment, and the prosecutor wasn't as specific as what you and I were just discussing, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Help me understand what the objections were at the trial court. I've looked at the record, and what I see is defense counsel, the prosecutor says that he's going to have her as the state's witness, and sits at the counsel table. The defense counsel objects, and the trial judge says something like, well, there's no other place for her to sit for voir dire, so I'll let her sit there for voir dire for now, and then doesn't really say anything else. And it looks to me like that's saying she can sit there for voir dire, but there's really doesn't say anything about the rest of the trial. Was there any other objection or anything?
There was no other objection in the trial court record that we can see, but frankly, the record, you know, may not show every single interaction during a trial court proceeding. Amicus argued that, you know, it isn't possible to show every single possible interaction. We do know that she
But it's defense counsel, it is defense counsel's obligation, if they have an objection, to make sure it's on the record.
Yes, Your Honor. And here they did make the objection. And I would also note that juror number 135 was a second juror who did, the court did individual voir dire with her and also stated to her that the alleged victim was a representative of the state at that point as well. So it wasn't just a single instance of informing individuals that she was a representative of the state. There was a second instance as well later on voir dire.
And so to invalidate what happened, is there any other remedy other than structural error?
This court could find structural error, Your Honor.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This court, if it so chose to not address the structural error, it could use the Chapman standard, which is a harmless error standard. And under that standard, Mr. Montgomery still wins because it's the state's burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the error did not affect the trial. And here the state simply cannot do that when the key question is the credibility of the witness, of the alleged victim. So the court could choose either structural error or the harmless error standard under U.S. v. Chapman.
Thank you.
Of course, that depends on a harmless error standard depends on whether or not we think there was a proper objection being made, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I apologize. Yes. And I do believe that under criminal 32, you don't, it's not required that a defense attorney object with specificity, but mainly to lay out all of the foundation of the objection. And here, defense counsel did object under the basis that it would deprive Mr. Montgomery of a fair trial. And a fair trial is under the 6th and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution.
And that was at the voir dire stage, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It was in a. It was before voir dire. It was a pre-trial issue that the state brought up for the first time at that point.
And it was never repeated?
Correct. There was no further objection in the record.
And let me ask, when he designated, the prosecutor designated the victim as with the label of the state's representative, how many times and who heard?
It was every single jury member, every single individual on the panel was in the room to hear that she was a representative of the state. And then a second time, juror number 135, who made it onto the panel, was told again at the bench that the alleged victim was a representative of the state of Ohio. And then she sat at counsel table during voir dire, during opening, during direct and cross, during closing. So it was a pervasive error.
Was there an objection to the title, a representative of the state?
Yes. Defense counsel did object to her being a representative of the state. He said that she is not a member of the state. There, it was with specificity. And here we know that she is not a representative of the state. That is a factual misrepresentation, especially under Marcy's law, where the alleged victim can have rights against the state. Their interests are divergent. They're not consistent with each other. So she cannot be a representative of the state of Ohio. That was a factual misrepresentation at the outset. And the trial court never provided any mitigation or instructed the jury on how to view this instruction or this statement that she was a representative of the state or that she sat at counsel table. So there was never a change in the lens with which to view her. Rather, it reinforced that she was a representative of the state and she was working simultaneously with the prosecution. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
I do have one question, and just hear me out. It may sound a little convoluted, but it's not. One of my concerns going in is do we if we were to reverse, would we make it tailored to this situation, especially where it's a he said she said situation, where credibility is of the utmost importance in helping a jury decide whether or not the state's proved its case beyond a reasonable doubt. But then we also have the harmless error standard and the structural error standard. So it seems to me the structural error would if we were to apply that standard in reaching the conclusion that you want, we would essentially be coming close to abolishing this for perhaps all trials. Whereas if we were to use the harmless error standard, it might be more akin to deciding it in this particular case where it seems that allowing that to happen could be viewed as more egregious. Can you comment on that?
You are correct, Your Honor. I think that there are two different ways to view a ruling. I think it depends on how much, you know, this court wants to limit this practice where they manipulate the seating of individuals in the courtroom and misrepresent to the jury who is a party to a case and who is not a party to a case. I think that there are two potential rules that you can make. One would be to just say that nothing in Marcy's law or the state constitution requires the trial court to permit the alleged victim to sit at counsel table. The second one could be that permitting an alleged victim to sit at counsel table and be introduced to the jury as a representative of the state of Ohio violates the defendant's right to a fair trial under the 6th and 14th Amendments. So one would be essentially a half step and one would be a full step, depending on how far this court wanted to decide the case.
Well, if we go with your first one, if it's required, then we would be saying a trial court could in its discretion allow it then, correct? Is that your, is that a position that's acceptable to you?
Yes, that would be acceptable to Mr. Montgomery. He would, he could prevail under both a structural error analysis and a harmless error analysis based off the specifics of this case and the fact that it was a credibility determination. I do think that there will be other cases in the future where it will be not as clear that there was prejudice under a harmless error analysis, but the court doesn't need to decide that issue today.
Thank you. Ms. Beard. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Sorry. Good morning, Your Honors, members of the court. Attorney Christine Beard on behalf of the state of Ohio. I disagree.
Counsel, yes. What's a representative of the state of Ohio? What does that mean?
Well, under 615B, Evidence Rule 615B, it means that it's someone that is an agent of the state. It's a police officer. It's an investigating officer. So I'm not here to argue that a victim under Evidence Rule 615 is a representative of the state.
So the prosecutor misled the jury?
No, I don't think, well, first of all, I don't know that the prosecutor is the one that made the determination that that is what the person sitting at counsel's table should be, how they should be introduced to the jury. I mean, there are two things that, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Who put that label on the victim?
The court. The court made the decision to introduce her as representative of the state, but she was also there as a victim under 615B4, okay, which permits her to be there. I don't think there was any intention to mislead anybody. I think the intention was to figure out, under the current situation with victims' rights, et cetera, how to introduce a victim without being prejudicial. In other words, I don't know what the proper introduction would be. Should it be, this is Miss So-and-so, she's just sitting at counsel table? Should it be, she's the victim? I think the state took the least offensive or prejudicial option of saying she's a representative of the state of Ohio because she's sitting at counsel table.
Counsel, would you agree it's a common misperception among people who are unfamiliar with the intricacies of the criminal justice system that sometimes they believe that the prosecutor represents the victim? Have you, throughout your career, ever had to correct that and say, we don't represent the victim, we represent the state of Ohio?
I think that's true. I think people do look at it as a civil situation where the victim is essentially represented by the state. And the prosecutor in this particular case went as far as to discuss that with the jury and say, listen, I don't represent the victim. I'm not here to tell you how to judge your credibility. That's up to the jury. That's the jury's province.
Well, counsel, doesn't it make it even then more confusing when the victim is sitting at trial counsel at the table?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think Evidence Rule 615B, which is promulgated by the Supreme Court, includes the victim. And there's nothing specifically that says any one of those accepted individuals mm-hmm. can sit at counsel table, but traditionally they do. So, you know, the defendant sits at counsel table, the agent sits at counsel table, the person who's helping in the prosecution sits at counsel table. Number four, the victim sits at counsel table if the court allows it.
But Ms. Beard, doesn't it have to be proved that they're the victim? So is it even fair to introduce them as the victim? Isn't it the alleged victim?
Well, there was no introduction as the victim. I think that's the problem the trial court found themselves in. How do we introduce someone who's sitting next to the state properly to the jury? And I think typically they are introduced, the people that sit there are introduced as either a party or a state's representative. And so the court just did what was traditionally done. I don't think there was any intention.
Who gets to decide if the victim can sit at the table?
The court and the prosecutor.
Let me rephrase that. Who gets to decide, who gets to initiate the ask to sit at the counsel table?
For instance,
it's between the state and the alleged victim or victims. Could the victim say, I want to sit at the counsel table?
No, Your Honor. I don't think the victim can or should be able to say, I want to sit at counsel table. I don't interpret Marcy's law or any of the progenies that way.
Okay,
at all.
So can the state say, victims, we want you to sit at the counsel table, 1, 2, 3, 4 victims?
Well, I think what the state can say is, Your Honor, I would like the victims, I've never seen that, but victim to sit at council table. And then it's up to the court to decide whether there is any, where there's any potential prejudice in that happening.
Well, what would be, what's the reason for an alleged victim to be sitting at council table? Maybe to gain some, either to manipulate the system or already confused lay people who might be confused about representation, or to bolster the victim's testimony, or to present some optics that might be beneficial to the state?
I don't think, well, first of all, under 615B4, you don't have to prove any necessity. So if you want to go with that part of the rule, there is no requirement that you prove necessity. The victim, if asked, is permitted to sit at council table. Now, if you go with an essential person who's helping in the prosecution, I think there is a requirement to show how they're essential. But I'm not sure that it necessarily has to be a verbal representation. But you can see in this case that the issue was consent. The victim was the only person that testified to the offense. And the defense relied on the victim's testimony the same way the state did. So when you talk about a he said, she said credibility conflict, I find it very hard to believe that there is any fault on the part of the state when the defense made no effort to put their client on the stand to create a credibility question.
Wait, have you heard of the Fifth Amendment? And therein lies the problem, because you have a victim or an alleged victim who is sitting at counsel table with trial counsel at all times in this case, and the defendant has the right not to testify, of course. And so there is a bolstering of credibility. There is you don't see that the trial court should look at whether there is a shift of balancing with the burden of proof on the state side, bolstering the credibility, although not verbally, obviously, but at least in appearance or in practice, bolstering the credibility of one witness over any other evidence?
Well, I think it, so what we would be saying is that the seating arrangement is fundamentally unfair, but there's nothing to suggest in this case that it was fundamentally unfair. The verdict of the jury indicates to us that they considered the credibility of the witnesses and made their decision based on the evidence that was presented at trial. In other words, in the Mass case, which the defense sets forth in their brief, in that case, they found that the rule didn't allow for the victim to be present at counsel table and there was prejudice. In that case, the jury recommended, and that's an Arkansas case, so they recommended that the defendant get maximum penalties in all cases. And what the court looked at in that situation was that sentencing recommendation indicated that the jury was likely impacted by the presence of the victim. That's not what we have here.
But there was no curative instruction, though, about what her role was. The jury didn't get any instruction from the court.
Well, there's always a curative instruction in the jury instructions themselves. The jury instructions themselves tell the jurors to use their own reasoning and common sense to judge the credibility of each and every witness that takes the stand. Not just the victim, but the sane nurse, the police officer, everybody that takes the stand. That is told to the jury in every case. In addition, the prosecutor on multiple occasions said to the jury, you have the obligation to judge the credibility of this witness. So they were told, and they deliberated for 4 hours. So it wasn't like they went out in 10 minutes and found the defendant guilty. That didn't
happen. Could the same nurse ever be a representative of the state?
I don't think the same nurse could be a representative of the state under the second section of that rule, but they could. And they have, and I put that in my brief, there's a situation where where a caseworker was allowed to sit at counsel table to help in the presentation of the prosecution. So you know, the victim can not only sit there as a victim, but also to help in the presentation of the prosecution if necessary. And remember, in this case, as was earlier stated, this victim was not believed by her entire family. She was not supported by her family. In fact, they supported the defendant and had maintained a relationship with him. So when they took the stand, the state had an opportunity to speak with the victim to cross-examine them in terms of what their bias was, in terms of how they felt about Mr. Montgomery, so that the jury could reach a conclusion about the truth of the matter.
Is there anything in the record that the state requested that she be there at the counsel table?
Yes, and before the voir dire, prior to the presentation of the case, the state moved the court to allow the victim to sit at counsel table. Then the state called her as the first witness. So the problems of concerning 6115A were taken care of. Her testimony wasn't influenced by other people. She wasn't consulting with anybody, but her testimony was already before the jury at that time.
And the state designated that, for the record, that she was the representative of the state, correct? So we had, if we go back to what Chief Justice O'Connor talked about, she was not only named as a representative of the state, but she was, the request was that she be both the representative of the state and sit at council table, correct, in the record? Mm-hmm.
No, what happened prior to the voir dire was that there was a conversation about why she should be permitted at counsel table. And the state argued that Marcy's Law and the evidence rule 615B permitted her to be present. They also discussed being a representative of the state as one of the parts of the rule that's included. But there was no request specifically that she be portrayed as someone who was teaming up with the state.
I'm sorry. I'm reading the transcript. The court indicates that the prosecutor, I see you have company at your counsel table, so let's address the issue. Yes, Your Honor, the state of Ohio is expressing its intent to designate the complaining witness in this case as the state's representative pursuant to 615, evidence rule 615B3 and 4, noting that she is a victim in this matter, that the Ohio Constitution as well as 293009 give her the right to be present anytime the defendant is present. They use the word representative.
But if you look at the rule, evidence rule 615B3 and 4, state's representative is not the language in those portions of the rule.
Well, just because he mistakenly included her as a representative, you know, she's not a police officer. She's not, you know, the other objective, representatives or I should say witnesses, but, she was designated erroneously as a representative.
I guess when I'm thinking about whether it was an erroneous representation, I think, and I'm certain of this, there was never any intention to mislead the jury about, the jury's not aware of what.
Nobody, you know what? You don't have to intentionally try to mislead the jury. If you do something and it results in this extreme prejudice, your intent or not is not something we consider. It might be for ethics, if there's an ethics complaint and you're a prosecutor or a defense attorney, but that's not the litmus test here.
Well, I don't think the jurors operate in a vacuum, and I think that they understand that there's going to be a victim in a case, and a victim's going to testify as a witness for the state. And so they already understand that they are part of the state's case. Putting them seated by counsel, I don't think bolsters their credibility any more than presenting their testimony on behalf of the state, any more than letting them sit in the back of the courtroom behind the defendant or behind the state's chair. They know already that there are adverse positions between the defendant, and the victim. And I don't think that jurors are surprised to see the victim.
Counsel, it's not the adverse relationship between the defendant and the victim. It's the cozy relationship. It's the verification of the victim by the state, as is evidenced by the proximity of sitting at the counsel table, which is far different if the victim is behind the rail or in the back of the courtroom or only comes in for testimony. But when the victim is sitting there throughout the trial and every witness and her, you know, the jury is looking at that victim as close as the trial table, that's a very different situation.
Well, there's nothing in the record to suggest, Your Honor, that there was a cozy relationship between the prosecutor and the victim. There was no objection to what was going on at counsel table. There was no indication that the prosecutor was being anything but professional with the victim sitting at counsel table.
Well, I'm not suggesting that there was anything inappropriate between the two of them at all. When I say cozy relationship, I don't mean that in any, it's too close for comfort. Let's put it that way.
Ms. Beard, this probably doesn't need to be asked, but a written transcript can't capture the rolling of eyes or the shaking of a head. So we don't really know how she comported herself while sitting at the table. And I'm not saying that we assume she did something untoward, but we don't know that she didn't, right?
Well, there was no objection by the defense to anything that was untoward. I would assume since they already had objected in the beginning of the trial to her being present, if there was something that was prejudicial that was going on, certainly they would have made an objection. Not to mention the fact that it's the court's obligation to make sure the court make sure that the procedure is fair. And had the court seen something that was unduly prejudicial, the court would have had the obligation to ask either that the victim leave or that the victim
is it a fair burden on a defendant and his or her counsel to have to also patrol the courtroom to watch what someone who's not typically deemed to be a state's representative is doing at the prosecution's counsel table? I mean, this goes to the issue of whether it's structural error or harmless error. I mean, how does that figure in?
I think the defense always has the obligation to object to courtroom procedure that they feel is improper. That's the purpose of having a defense counsel. But in terms of whether this is bolstering the credibility of the victim, there are two ways to look at that. One is the seating arrangement. And what I'm gathering is that as a general rule, the seating arrangement is not what's problematic here. But in this particular case, it seems to be that the designation of state's representative appears to be the more problematic issue. But in either case, in the federal court, similar things have been done and the same argument has been made. And in those cases, they have found that the victim's presence is not prejudicial. And if in fact there's nothing that allows the victim to be present at counsel table, then you have to look to see whether there was harmless error. And
thank you, counsel. Ms. Spriggs?
Yes, Your Honor. I recognize that I've used all my time. If there are no further questions. Thank you. A defendant's right and a victim's right are not in conflict here. Nothing in the law allows a trial court to permit a victim to sit at counsel table, and nothing in the law allows a jury to be misled into thinking the alleged victim represents the state of Ohio. Mr. Montgomery asks that you vacate and remand this case for a new trial. Thank you.
Counsel, follow-up question. On the introduction as state representative, how does that vouch for credibility?
At the outset, it's telling the jurors that the state and the victim are one and the same. They are part of the same team, the same party. when it nothing could be further from the truth. They are not the prosecution is in fact required to consider not just the victim, but the public and the defendant's rights. And by stating that they are a representative of the state, they vouch for their credibility and conflate the interests of the two parties.
I understand the conflation issue. I'm trying to get to the vouching issue. A lot of people don't like the government these days. So how does being introduced as a state representative vouch for credibility?
There are certain circumstances or certain individuals, I should say, like police officers and prosecutors who have inherent credibility. And when they and that comes from case law in state or U.S. v. Aganos and U.S. v. Petrarchia. And when you have an individual seated right next to them and then further introduced as a representative of the state, you cloak that individual in the imprimatur of those individuals.
So it's the combination of sitting and introduction.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if we find that the sitting is not improper, your argument fails?
No, Your Honor, because the representative of the state issue, the factual misrepresentation to the jury as to who this individual was still remains and still persists for the duration of the trial.
All right, so then how does introduction as a state representative vouch for credibility? Forget where they're sitting.
Yes, Your Honor, because they are not the same party. And by stating that they are, it is sharing the credibility of the victor of the state with the victim.
But counsel, isn't it a fact that the jury is instructed that nothing the prosecutor says is evidence?
Yes, that is true. But here, the fact that there was no mitigation really instructs the jury that the way that she is presented as a representative of the state, seated right next to them, is the lens that the jury is supposed to view her through, that she is one with the state.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision, ladies.
Thank you.